This is ASO briefing to the ICANN community from 1330 to 1500 in Thames Suite UTC plus one.
Hi, this is Louis Lee, and we are at the ASO briefing to the ICANN community at the ICANN 50 meeting in London. Thank you for having that door closed. At least if I may have the ASO AC members introduce themselves first, and then we'll continue on. Ron?
Ron De Silva from Time Warner, Aaron Region.
Ricardo Patara from LACNIC Region, ASO AC representative.
Jorge Villa, the SOAC from London Region, too.
Jason Schiller, ASOAC from the Aaron Region.
Of course, myself, Louis Lee. I'm hail from the Aaron Region, chair of the ASO Address Council.
Wilfried Buber on the Address Council for the RIPE NCC Service Region.
Alan Barrett on the ASOAC from the AFRINIC region.
Fiona Songa, ASOAC from the AFRINIC region.
Aftab Siddiqui, ASOAC from EPENIC region.
And Tomohiro Fujisaki, ASOAC, also from EPENIC region.
Okay, and then continuing back around the table, and then I'll pass the mic for the folks in the room that are not at the table.
I'm Toshio Tachibana from the Number Resources Policy Development Forum in Japan.
Lito Ibarra from LACNIC Board.
Carlos Reyes, ICANN staff.
Susan Hamlin, Aaron, Director of Communications.
Hollis Kara, Aaron, Communications Manager.
I'm Paul Rendek, the Director of External Relations for the RIPE NCC.
Elise Garrick, ICANN, IANA person.
Narani Nimpunai, Head of Outreach and Communications, NetNode.
Anthony Golan, RIPE NCC Communications Writer.
Maria Gallo, LACNIC's Communication Coordinator.
Germán Valdés, NRO Executive Secretary.
Axel Pavlik, RIPE NCC person.
Carlos Martínez, LACNIC person.
Nick Herka, Communications Manager, RIPE NCC.
Excellent. And Dimitri, would you introduce yourself, please?
Dmitry Kochmanyuk, RIPE NCC Region AC representative.
Excellent. Okay. We have prepared a presentation, and the presentation is focused on the status of IPv4 depletion and transfers and following on with recent activities in the IPv6. Jason, if you would.
Hi, my name is Jason Schiller, and we're going to be presenting today on the status of IPv4 depletion and IPv4 transfers and also IPv6, and take some discussion in Q&A at the end. However, please do interrupt me and ask questions. If I say some jargon that's particular to the RIRs, if you don't know what RIR is, please stop me and interrupt me. So we're going to start off with IANA depletion. What is IANA depletion? Well, that's when the IANA free pool was emptied and the IANA has no more IPv4 addresses available for the RIRs. And that happened when an RIR requested more space than was available in the free pool, with the exception of the last five slash eights, which is 83 million IP addresses. Those were reserved for special use to be determined by each region independently to aid with IPv6 transition and to create a soft landing to ease the pain of the depletion of IPv4. So that global policy was ratified by the ICANN board on March 6th, 2009, and that's the text of the policy there, as well as a URL to where you can find it. So what about IPv4 space that gets returned to the IANA after that happens? Well, that's a very interesting question, because when the IANA emptied its free pool in February of 2011, what was then the existing policy ended, and they immediately moved to the exhaustion phase. And in that phase, IANA allocated 1/8 to each RAR. And at this point, IANA had no policy to make other IPv4 allocations. So we needed to deal with that issue, and we did so by passing a global policy for post-exhaustion IPv4 allocation mechanisms. And basically what that policy did was it instructed IANA to create a recovered IPv4 address pool to collect any returned addresses in that pool, and that pool was to remain inactive until the first RAR had less than a /9 in its total inventory. When that happened, the policy was activated. The space in that pool was divided 5 ways equally, with the remainder left in the pool. So they rounded down to the nearest CIDR, and each RIR received 1/5 of what was in the pool, minus the rounding down and the remainders. And then this process repeats twice yearly on the 1st of March and the 1st of September thereafter. So here is the text of the policy, which was ratified by the ICANN board on May 6, 2012, as well as a link to where you can find it. So following IANA depletion is RIR depletion, and that is essentially when the RIRs are out of addresses, except for soft landing, which I'll talk about in a moment. In this case, the RIRs have no available addresses to provide organizations that are growing and requiring additional addresses. So that means once an organization uses up its own store, it must either stop growing, get additional addresses from transfers on the open market, transition their growth to IPv6 only, deploy some sort of address-saving technology such as carrier-grade NAT, or some combination of those things. So what exactly is soft landing? Well, in the RIPE and APNIC regions, it's this concept that new and existing organizations can get exactly 1/22, which is a little more than 1,000 IP addresses, which is generally a large amount of addresses for a small organization. LACNIC has a similar policy, except they break theirs into 2 stages. For the first half of the addresses, any organization can get an additional /22 every 6 months. And then in the second stage, the second half of the addresses, only new organizations can get exactly 1/22. Aaron did something quite different from the rest of them. Aaron put aside 1/10, which is about 4 million IP addresses, for new networks who are deploying IPv6 only, but need some small amount of IPv4 addresses for bootstrapping. For example, to do IPv4 to IPv6 translation, or to be able to dual stack their DNS servers. AFRINIC also did 2 different phases. The first phase was business as usual, except that their cap was reduced from a /11, which is about 4 million IPs, to a /13, which is 500,000 IPs. And then in the second phase, when only a /11 is left, each organization can get up to a /22 at a time. They've also held back a /12 in reserve for future use. The idea behind a soft landing was to try and create a smooth transition to IPv6, to prolong IPv4 availability, to maintain the existing IPv4 during transition to IPv6, and to ensure new entrants are able to get IPv4 addresses and remove any barriers to entry. There also tends to be associated with this a more stricter IP requirements, tightening the justification window, for example, making it a little bit more difficult to get addresses and to continue to promote efficient use of IPv4, especially when there's so few addresses left. So I'm going to talk now about some history and the depletion timeline. Aaron, IANA depleted on February 3rd, 2011. This is their announcement and the URL for where you can find it. Shortly thereafter, APNIC depleted April 15th, 2011. And RIPE depleted September of the following year. Then in May of 2014, LACNIC announced that they had dropped below a slash 9 or 8 million IP addresses, and that triggered IANA to redistribute the recovered addresses, which they did on the 22nd of May. And what they did was they gave the equivalent of a slash 11 or 2 million IP addresses to each RAR, and I have here listed on the slide the individual blocks that were given out. And then on June 10th of 2014, LACNIC announced that they had depleted their available pool. And what we have left is Aaron and Afrinic still holding IP space and doing business as usual. Per Jeff Houston's predictions, Aaron looks like it's going to deplete in February of 2015 and Afrinic in August of 2019, although there is some variation in the confidence interval there for those windows. So what are we doing? We're actively recovering addresses. We have recovery policies in all five regions. IPv4 addresses are valid as long as the original criteria continues to be met. Resources of organizations who cease to exist are recovered. So if a company goes out of business, those resources are returned or recovered. And members who don't renew their membership annually, they are considered defunct, and those addresses are recovered as well. APNIC and LACNIC actively recover unused resources, as does Aaron. Aaron has a little bit of some other interesting details to it, though. They look for organizations that are out of compliance, and they request those organizations to renumber and return unused resources to bring them back into compliance or near compliance. They revoke resources for lack of payment, and they revoke resources for fraud also. So in the Aaron region, there is some churn in the addresses. Some addresses are voluntarily returned. Some are revoked, usually for non-payment, and some are reclaimed due to fraud or because a company has gone out of business. Since 2004, we've received a little more than 3/8s, or about 61 million IPs back. And we've returned a slash 8, the equivalent of 16 million IPs, to the IANA in 2012. So this is a graph that shows the IP addresses that have been allocated or assigned year by year, as well as the ones that have been reclaimed. And this is a listing of the IP addresses year by year that have been reclaimed, as well as the ASNs that have been reclaimed. In LACNIC, up until now, as of June of this year, we have recovered 53 ASNs and 86 IP blocks that total to about 354,000 IP addresses. We also have transfer policies in each of the five regions. Transfer policies fall into three flavors, mergers and acquisitions, which happens whenever merger and acquisition activity occurs, when one company merges or buys another company. All the RARs have a policy for this. We also have specified transfer policies, which is just about transferring IP addresses from one organization to another. APNIC, Aaron, RIPE, and LACNIC have a specified transfer policy. And then we also have a special case inter-RIR transfer policy between members in different regions, which Aaron and APNIC have. So for merger and acquisitions, basically what we're talking about here is when a network, its equipment, its user base, and the associated IPs are moved from one organization to another. The specified transfers do vary a bit from region to region. In APNIC, when there is a specified transfer, you can get up to a 24-month supply of addresses. And in the Aaron region, it's a little bit more complicated. There still is the slash 24 minimum, but there are some additional conditions on the source and the recipient. If the source is inside the ARIN region, then they're not eligible to receive IPs from ARIN for 12 months. And on the recipient side, if the recipient is in the ARIN region, then they're required to justify a 24-month need. If the recipient or the source is outside of the ARIN region, then it's that region's policy that's applied. In the case of LACNIC, they recently implemented a transfer policy. In their case, the recipient must hold the block for 1 year prior to transfer, and they must have a justified need of 12 months. And they can't receive any space from LACNIC for 1 year. So here is a graph showing the APNIC transfers. The dark blue on the bottom is transfers within the APNIC region, and the lighter blue on top is inter-RIR transfers with ARIN. And it's fairly linear in terms of its growth. If we look at the ARIN graph, this shows the transfers of the different types. The green there is mergers and acquisitions, and that number continues to be high. It also shows ASN transfers, which is fairly recent, starting in 2012, with a small number, 3, 7, and 4 over the last 3 years, as well as inter-RIR transfers with APNIC, which has been rising since 2012, going from 6, 17 to 24. This does look fairly linear. However, you have to remember that 24 is only half of the year. So if you double those numbers, it actually looks like it's more exponential. So it looks like transfers are starting to really take off. Here we have a graph of the ripe transfers. This includes the number of transfer requests as well as fulfilled transfers. AFRINIC lacks a specified transfer policy, and the LACNIC transfer policy is fairly new, just going into service when they ran out of IPv4 addresses, when they depleted. So there's not really any data to present at this time. So status of IPv6 address space, I think we've all seen these graphs, and they haven't changed over the years. All of the RIRs got a /12. They're making allocations from it. IPv6 deployment is on the rise, which is good. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what's actually happening in the world of IPv6 networking besides putting addresses onto networks. There was an effort in June of 2011 called World IPv6 Day, and the idea behind this was to try and get people to turn on IPv6 for 24 hours as a test flight. So ISOC organized this. They had the day on June 8th, 2011. It was initiated by a number of large content providers, and the goal here was to prove that IPv6 can work. They also wanted to raise awareness for IPv6 brokenness. Back then, there was no concept of happy eyeballs. Happy eyeballs is where your client will try to get the data over IPv4 and IPv6 and use whichever works better. Back then, there were some applications that if a destination was reachable over both v4 and v6, it would only try IPv6, which means if you were configured to use IPv6 but you weren't connected to an IPv6 network, it just straight up would not work. There were a lot of other applications that would fall back from IPv6 to IPv4, but there was a significant amount of latency for that fallback to happen. And there was a lot of concern that content providers, the eyeballs that were trying to get to their content, that they would bail out when the web page didn't load quickly. So they were concerned that their hit rates would go down. They also wanted to motivate transit providers to turn on IPv6 and motivate vendors to support IPv6. And one of their goals here was also to break the chicken and egg problem. There were these content providers that didn't want to deploy V6 because there weren't any V6 eyeballs. There weren't a lot of people that were asking for content over V6. At the same time, the transit providers weren't incentivized to deploy V6 because all of the content that their customers wanted to get to was available over V4. So This was followed up a year later with World IPv6 Launch, also organized by the ISOC. And the difference here was the goal here was to turn on V6 and to leave it on permanently. They got ISPs to commit to turning on IPv6 for greater than 1% of their residential customer base, and content providers to turn on V6 on their main site and leave it on indefinitely. And this means www.company.com would be dual-stacked, as opposed to what a lot of people did in the previous year, which was to set up an alternate site that would be something like www.ipv4.company.com and www.ipv6.company.com. Also, for home router vendors to participate, they had to enable IPv6 by default. So what you see here is a graph as seen by Google for IPv6 traffic as a percentage of the total traffic it sees. You can see the graph is exponential, and we are on the rise. For a long time, we were hovering at 0.5%. Then we had World Day, and it started to become exponential. And you can see it got steeper in the following year, and traffic continues to grow, doubling about every year. So we've moved from before World Day at 0.5% to 3.5%. If we zero in on some specific geographies, we can see Germany is at 8.75%. The U.S. is at 7.99%. So there are some good deployment stories out there. The other way to look at how well deployed IPv6 is to look at the content providers. So Alexia makes this list of top 50 websites, and they're testing whether or not they're IPv6 enabled. And you can see prior to World Day, we were right around 1%. On World Day, we went up to 5%. But a lot of people then turned it back off the next day, and we dropped back down to 2%. We had about a permanent doubling for a year, and then we had the launch, at which point we went up to about 7%, and we stayed there until recently. We've just eked up to about 8.7%. So the results, World Day, IPv6 traffic doubled from 0.24% to 0.41%. relative to IPv4 traffic. So it's very exciting that it doubled, but unfortunately it is a small sliver of the total traffic. For websites, the top 50 Alexia websites went from 1% to 5% on that day, and permanently 2% stayed on. So we doubled the V6 content on the internet. Over 1,000 content providers participated, generated a lot of interest in V6, and it disproved this IPv6 brokenness would severely impact content providers. World IPv6 launch results, we now have 243 ISPs with greater than 0.1% of their IPv6 subscriber base enabled, and we have 191 ISPs with greater than 1%. So that is definitely the subscribers are moving up. They continue to double about yearly. IPv6 traffic is continuing to double year after year. As I mentioned on the previous slide in the graph, we've seen a recent uptick. We saw an uptick from the launch from 2% to 7% with a recent uptick to about 8.7%. And any questions?
Thank you very much, Jason. I do note that there were a few more people that came in a little late, and I want to let you know that please do feel free to ask us questions. Many of us at the table are from the Address Council, and there are RIR staff in the room also. Were there topics, the ones that you were interested in? Were there others that you were interested in? Please do speak up. We have plenty of time right now. Okay, and with that, we will close the session. Thank you very much for coming, and I will ask ICANN staff to let me know when the recording is posted so that we may distribute the link to it. And we'll make sure that the slides are in your hands, and if there's anything else to do there, we'll work with you on that. Thank you.